irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to welcome you to the post-diet revolution. Making peace with food means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Remember, it's not what you're eating that's the real problem. It's what's eating at you. It's what's weighing on you. When we identify and work through those underlying conflicts, things with food totally change for good. That's how you win the diet war. 818-602-4929. So switching gears, here's an email question from Rochelle. She says, I read your article about the five mental blocks to weight loss. That's an article I wrote for the British Obesity Society a few years ago. She said, I read your article. I could relate to a couple of the mental blocks, but what do I actually do to stop sabotaging myself? Well, Rochelle, that is a great question, and so I curated a couple of great articles on this topic. The first one is called Seven Thoughts That Sabotage Your Weight Loss Goals. And this is from Prevention Online, and it's written by Jenna Bergen Sutherland. And she says, when it comes to losing weight, your own mind can be your biggest enemy, whether it's talking yourself out of a workout or reacting like, what's wrong with me, when your skinny, skinny coworker indulges in yet another handful of the office M&Ms. As hard as it can seem, changing your inner dialogue is vital to hitting your goals, and it takes a lot of the stress out of the journey. So she says there are seven destructive thoughts that you can identify and change to stop the sabotage. So the first one is, I shouldn't deprive myself. How many times has this thought crossed your mind as you're staring down at the bread basket or considering dessert? After all, everyone else is getting to eat those things. Why shouldn't you? You shouldn't deprive yourself. But you know, once you go down this road, it's very hard to stick to a healthy eating plan without feeling like your life sucks. So the result is you cave. And if that's happening regularly, it's keeping you from hitting your goals. So here's how to change it. The exact definition of deprivation is the damaging lack of material benefits considered to be basic necessities in a society. So the key word is necessities. Food in general is certainly a necessity, but a brownie? Maybe not a necessity. She says, you know, the next time this thought whispers across your brain, take a step back and ask yourself two questions. One, am I really depriving myself of a necessity? And two, if I don't change my eating habits, if I don't deprive myself, what am I depriving myself of? And the answer to that is you're depriving yourself of a healthier, happier you, a healthier, happier life. So she says, keep that in mind and you'll happily pass up the junk food. But, you know, I actually want to add here that the anticipation of deprivation makes you want something even more. One brownie is not a problem. It's when that one becomes three or more that there's a problem. So I say, have the darn brownie. When you give yourself permission to have the thing you think you cannot have, you can decide whether or not you really want it. Or, you know, do you just want it because you can't have it? And if you actually enjoy the brownie, you're less likely to have more. If you say, well, I really shouldn't deprive myself, then, you know, yeah, you shouldn't deprive yourself, but you may not be setting, you may be setting yourself up for future deprivation if you don't have it. Hopefully that makes sense. But remember, one unhealthy choice doesn't really impact your weight. You can have a bowl of ice cream. You can have a brownie. Three bowls, like one of our callers a few weeks ago, she was talking about, that's a problem. One is not. And don't make the mistake of doing the all or nothing thing. You know how that goes. You know, I ate the brownie, so now I've blown the whole day. I might as well have three or five or the whole batch. No, you didn't blow the whole day. All you did was eat one brownie. One brownie doesn't ruin the whole day. Thin people don't say, thin people who have a normal relationship to food, don't say, oh, I blew it. Thin people say, that was a good brownie. Thin people say, do I want that brownie or not? I had a bite of it. It's not that great. Nah. And then they don't have the rest of it. Remember, eating brownies or ice cream or whatever your danger food is, it's part of normal eating. Yes, normal eating. So don't think I shouldn't deprive myself. Think, do I want that or not? And then make a decision, especially if you give yourself permission to have it. So the next destructive thought is, I'll start tomorrow. That's a big one, isn't it? We've all said this to ourselves at one point or another, whether it was about cleaning up our eating or getting back to our workouts. And we also know what usually happens. Tomorrow never comes, and you get stuck in a vicious cycle of putting off change. So here's how to change it. The moment you think, I'll start tomorrow, ask yourself what little step forward you can make right now. Right now, not later in the day, not tomorrow, but that exact moment. Can you make a small tweak with what you're about to order for lunch? Can you refill your water glass before you type another email? It might feel scary to make positive, healthy changes, but the sooner you get started, the sooner you'll see results. And remember, you can do this. Small changes all add up. So instead of I'll start tomorrow, I'm going to start right now. Next destructive thought, I don't have the time. I have no time. I have work. I have kids. I have a life. I have no time. Well, when you get out of the habit of regular exercise, it's all too easy to blame it on your busy schedule. There are only 24 hours in a day, right? But here's the thing. Your days are never going to get longer. There will never be the 36-hour day. So people always talk about finding the time to exercise. You can't find it. It's nowhere to be found. You have to make the time for yourself. Here's how to do that. Instead of telling yourself, I don't have the time, say, I choose not to exercise today. Instead, I'm choosing to watch TV. I'm choosing to stay late at work or whatever else you've got going on. Reminding yourself that you're making a choice on how you spend your time makes it a lot harder to let yourself off the hook, but it's also empowering. It reminds you that you do have control over your day and you have control over what happens within those 24 hours. If you're skipping a workout, that's okay, but do it because you choose to. So instead of, oh, I'm helpless over my schedule, I don't have the time, say, you know, I'm choosing not to do that, or I'm choosing to do it. So the empowerment part is going to make it a lot easier for you to make that healthier choice. Another destructive thought is, no one else has to work as hard as I do, so I deserve this. This may or may not relate to you, but if you've ever had a thought along these lines, you know, let's be real. Yes, there are people out there who have it easier than you. It's true. It's true. They're out there. They're living easy, fabulous lives. Don't have a thought in a care in the world. Don't have to worry about their weight, money, anything. Everything's golden. They're out there. And there are also lots of people who have it harder than you. And some of them are still finding ways to outsmart their genetics and life situations to take control of their health. So saying this kind of defeatist thinking out loud gives it power. If you say this kind of thing often enough, it starts to feel true. So to change it, replace this negative thought, this negative mantra, with something along the lines of, I'm determined to succeed. I'm going to succeed. I'm not a victim of my genetics, or I'm not a victim of my circumstances. I can change things. So instead of looking at the things you can't change, focus on improving the things you can change. And remember, you are in control, even if it doesn't seem that way. You are in control of the choices that you make. Next destructive thought. I just have a slow metabolism. When you're eating well and working out regularly, but you're still not seeing results, it's definitely easier to blame it on your metabolism or on your genes than to take G-E-N-E-S, than to take a hard look at what you're doing or not doing. So while it's true that some people are genetically predisposed to being overweight, there are also tons of possibilities that don't have to do with that for why you're not losing weight. And most of them may be leading you back to habits you may or may not be aware of. So here's how to change the destructive thought of, I just have a slow metabolism. Instead of sitting back and placing the blame on something you can't control, replace that power-robbing thought with the truth. I have the power to change my health and fitness. Whether it's fitting in a few muscle-building moves throughout your day, or stepping up the intensity of your workouts, or choosing smarter snacks, there are lots of things you can do to step up your metabolism. And none of them involve pointing the finger at something beyond your control. So if you think you have a slow metabolism, think, okay, you know what? What can I do to make that slow metabolism faster? I have a few more of these to go, but I also want to invite anyone out there, if you have something on your mind, please give me a call, 818-602-4929. Again, it doesn't have to be about this topic. It can be anything that is eating at you, because whatever is going on inside is what leads to whatever happens with food. So when we get to those root issues, get rid of, you know, the behavior for good. Again, 818-602-4929. The next destructive thought is, I'll just have a few bites. I'll just have a few bites. In the history of all time, this has probably never happened. How many times have we all told ourselves that lie? Here's a caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nina. This is Melinda from Beverly Hills.
Hi, Melinda from Beverly Hills. I actually just talked about you with the three bowls of ice cream earlier in the show. I don't know if you heard it.
I did, and I wanted to update you if you can.
Absolutely.
Well, so I realized that the three bowls of ice cream that I was eating, I was in autopilot. As soon as I ate the last bite of bowl number one, I was walking to the refrigerator to fill for bowl number two, and the same with bowl number three. So fast forward to when I called in last, I'm now down to one bowl, and I go back for one little scoop.
So I'm
making progress. And what I did, it has to do with what you were just saying about that changing your inner dialogue. I said to myself in a nice way, Can you just have a little discipline and self-control, really? And can you just enjoy one bowl? It's as good as two or three bowls, and just enjoy one. And so it was just a matter of self-control, a little discipline, and just say no. And so I'm happy about that.
That's great. I just want to say, I don't know that it was really about discipline. I think you gave yourself permission, enjoy one bowl, as opposed to, I shouldn't have this, I shouldn't have this, I shouldn't have this. The result was discipline, but it's when you give yourself permission to have something, you don't have that guilty, oh, I shouldn't be having this, which makes you end up having even more. Do Do you think that could be part of it? You're just being a little bit nicer to yourself?
Yes, and also reflecting on that maybe I'm eating more because I'm not getting what I need in life. I turned around the other day and said to my boyfriend, just out of the blue, all the things I want. And they're not material things necessarily, but I just think that felt good.
Yes, because you were, as I recall when we talked, I asked you, well, what do you want more of, or what sweetness or comfort are you not getting in your life that you're trying to get through ice cream?
Right. Yeah, whether it's a getaway weekend or, you know, a bracelet or, you know, or a massage or a gym membership, whatever it was, it all came out.
And was he receptive?
Yes. I already got one of them.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, because if you're doing something with food that you don't like or understand, there's always a reason. And when you can kind of illuminate that reason and then resolve the true underlying root reasons, then you don't turn more to ice cream. When you get what you want, you're not going to want the wanting more is not going to get played out in different ways. So that's awesome. So you learned a lesson about speaking up for what you want and need.
That was part of it too. So yeah, so it's I'm a work in progress, but I really appreciate your input and you know, and I'm still enjoying the ice cream. I'm just, like I said, I'm just enjoying one. One is as good as three. It really is.
Exactly. And when you give yourself permission to have it, you actually enjoy it more. When you're having it going, yeah, this is good. I shouldn't be having it. What am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? Like you're not enjoying it. I'm guessing that maybe that one bowl plus the scoop is much yummier than the three bowls were with all that guilt.
It is, exactly. So it felt good, also empowering that I put a limit on it, or, you know, that I took control of it.
Yeah, because once you knew what was going on inside you that you were distracting yourself from, then you could put a limit on it, because now it's about ice cream, not about something else.
Right, and I don't know if any of your other listeners eat in autopilot, but it's not great, you know? I mean, it's really not a way to, it's not the way you're supposed to slow down, enjoy your food, stop when you're full, and autopilot eating is, you know, anyway, I definitely experienced it, and I'm working on it.
Well, it sounds like you're working really hard and actually making some substantive changes. You know, the autopilot that you describe, a lot of people, when they binge, they'll say, oh, I just got in the zone. Because when you're in that zone, you're not feeling anything, or you're just numb, or it just takes you from something that you don't want to look at. And it's not, you know, people who binge often say, oh, I didn't even like it. I just couldn't stop. And when you realize what's eating at you, and then you can stop, and then you can enjoy what you're eating much more, which is the point of food, right? It's supposed to be good.
Yeah, but you know, there's something to, we'll save a little for tomorrow.
Yeah, but when you're,
you know,
yeah,
you don't have to finish the package.
Yeah,
save a bowl for tomorrow.
And inherent in that is, I can have it tomorrow. If it's, I'm having this and I'm never having it again, and I'm never buying it again, and I'm not having it again until I lose 10 pounds or whatever, then it just becomes this battle. But when you say save some for tomorrow, that implies I'm going to have it tomorrow. I can have it tomorrow. And then it's not about eating ice cream to resolve something psychological. Then it's about eating ice cream because, hey, it's yummy, and into every life some ice cream must fall. So, good job, Melinda.
Thank you. And on another quick note, a lot of people I know who are trying to lose that 10 or 20 pounds are looking at the keto diet, the one that was as seen on Shark Tank that all of the sharks invested in. And it's a 30-day keto weight loss to boost your metabolism. So I don't know if you're, if you have an opinion on that, or if you're hearing about it.
Oh, I've been hearing about keto for a long time. Dr. Adrian Udeem, who was on my show a couple months ago, talked about why, from a medical standpoint, there's a lot of bad science about the keto diet, and it's pretty much unsustainable. And there are some, from what I understand, that there's some very negative consequences in the long run, cholesterol wise, and all that fat in your body. It's a diet, right? So the problem is, yeah, the keto diet probably works. Every diet works. But then you go off it. If you haven't learned why you're eating, you're just going to gain weight back.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a metabolism booster. So then what happens when you're off it? What happens to your metabolism? It's all screwed up, perhaps.
Well, you know what else is a metabolism booster? Eating every few hours, that boosts your metabolism.
Okay.
You know, working out with weights, that boosts your metabolism. You know, there are a lot of ways that, and probably why the ketogenic diet boosts metabolism is because people are eating more consistently. So, you know, my thought on keto or any diet is that it's a diet. Eventually, you're going to stop being on that diet, and then what? And this is, I see this with friends of mine who are always, they're always on diets, and they always go off of them. They gain a bunch of weight back, and then they go on another diet. Right now, they're on, like, low carb. But you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to lose a bunch of weight. They're going to go off the diet, and then they're just going to eat a bunch of carbs and go back to their own way, old ways of being unhealthy, gain all the weight back, and go back on another diet. That's why diets ultimately fail, because diets focus on what you're eating, not why, not on what's eating at you. And if you're using food as a way of resolving something psychological, you know, you can be on the keto for 10 years. It doesn't matter. You've got to resolve those underlying issues.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's very helpful, Dr. Nina. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I didn't come up with this line, but I kind of love it about diets. Never trust a four-letter word where the first three letters spell die.
There you go.
There you go. That's basically my thought on all diets. Unless they're just healthy ways of eating.
Oh, that's great. All right. Well, thank you for your support.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me know. And again, sounds like you're doing a great job. Enjoy your ice cream.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I think she thinks that she's telling herself, hey, you know, enough is enough, and having discipline. But what I hear, and she is, but what I hear is that she's actually being kinder to herself. Enjoy one bowl. It's okay. Have a bowl and a scoop. It's fine. And giving permission is what actually has probably made all the difference in the world. The way we relate to ourselves is so important. You know, if you're with a friend and the friend was eating ice cream, I don't think you'd say, have a little self-control. You'd say, have one bowl and just, you know, have maybe a little bit more, but it's fine. You can have more tomorrow. That's kind. When you're kind to yourself, you feel better. And when you feel better, you're actually less likely to use ice cream to feel better, because why would you? You already feel pretty good. Okay, so I was at the destructive thought of, I'll just have a few bites. And I'm sure that a lot of you guys can relate to saying, you know, I'll just have a couple bites of that cheesecake or whatever, only to wind up scraping the bottom of the ice cream tub, scraping the cheesecake off the plate, etc. If you decide to give in to a food, you're probably going to feel guilty for cheating, quote unquote, cheating on your diet before the first bite hits your taste buds. And when you feel guilty, guess what? You tend to eat more. So here's how to change it. Be honest with yourself. If you're going to have it, if you're going to indulge, make the choice to enjoy every single bite, kind of like Melinda with her ice cream. Enjoy it, and then move on to some healthier foods at your next meal. Research shows that people who are reasonable with themselves when it comes to these kind of slip-ups or occasional unhealthy choices are much more likely to go back to healthy eating the next time they pick up the fork. When you're not reasonable with yourself and you're racked with guilt and self-recrimination, you feel terrible, you're criticizing yourself, you're judging yourself, guess what? You're going to end up eating just to get away from your own mean internal critical voice. So when you're reasonable, when you give yourself permission, then you have it, you enjoy it, and next time you have more broccoli. The next destructive thought is, I worked out today. I deserve this treat. You know, it is tempting to reward yourself after a tough workout. But your real reward should be the healthier you that you're working toward at the gym or whatever you're doing exercise-wise. That should be your reward, not chocolate cake. Plus, research shows that when we try and reward ourselves with food after exercising, we actually end up overcompensating and taking in even more calories than we just burned off. So eating after a workout should be about refueling, not undoing all your hard work. So here's how to change the, I worked out today, so I deserve this. Instead of looking at the dessert menu or ordering that hamburger with extra bacon and fries, stay focused on your goal. Stay focused on how great you feel from getting your sweat on. And then factor in how the food you're about to eat will influence that happy, good feeling. Will it make you feel better or make you feel sluggish and weighed down? So if you see, I'm not going to feel so good. I'm not going to, if I left the gym, I felt good. I felt like strong and such a great feeling. How am I going to feel after I eat that hamburger and fries? Not so good. So then think, you know what? I worked out today. I feel great. Why ruin it? And then choose a healthier option. So those are the seven destructive thoughts that we have that often undermine weight loss or healthy eating efforts and how to change them. Then I want to talk about an article from Eat This, Not That. And a writer named Jennifer Hussein wrote a blog post called 10 quote unquote healthy things you're doing that sabotage your weight loss. She says, so you've been dieting and exercising like crazy, yet that pesky number on your scale still won't go down. Even if you're doing all the right things, choosing healthy snacks, cutting out sugar, slashing calories, you might be doing it all wrong. You may not realize it, but some everyday food and exercise habits could be seriously sabotaging your weight loss efforts. So the first so-called healthy habit that's not actually healthy is going sugar-free and that having sugar-free substitutes. Just because something says sugar-free on the label does not automatically make it a healthy choice. Many of these products aren't exact. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry. I'm calling from Burbank, California. How are you?
Welcome, Larry from Burbank.
I know this isn't food related, but just wanted to run it by you. It's pretty intense and dark and pretty rough, but to get your take, I'm going to be talking with a professional in a couple of days about stuff that could be very dicey in terms of legal ramifications in your profession, and I'm wondering what your take is in terms of wiggle room with the mandatory reporting law. But I throw it out there, kind of a curveball.
Well, mandated reporting involves, you know, if you're going to do harm to somebody else, a child, an elderly person, actually, yourself, actually with yourself, it's not mandatory. Someone says they're going to hurt themselves, it's not mandatory, but it should be.
Sure. No, I understand. Okay. It'll be like I say, going to a place that I have not gone to in detail before, with this professional, psychologist, a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to get your take, maybe I should check with him first as well before even getting into it, you know?
Well, I'm not sure what you're referring to, Larry, but I can tell you that confidentiality is the hallmark of therapy. I mean, you have to feel safe to talk about whatever it is that's on your mind. There's a big difference between saying, I feel like I'd like to go and do something destructive, and actually having a plan. It's when you have a plan that it becomes a legal issue.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling.
Do you have a plan to do something destructive?
No. But, ideation, et cetera, et cetera. And I hate to dance around the core stuff without being blunt, but... No, I'll say no.
All right. Well, I think that you should, when you go and see this therapist, that you should bring this up with him or her, because they can best answer the question. But and maybe do some research on since you're in California, the laws in California. But it's a mandated reporting is when there is harm or future harm or abuse to an elderly person or a child, or when you're going to hurt somebody else.
Okay. Gotcha. No, that is not going to happen. Absolutely not. That's why, I called. I get it. If you mind shifting gears.
No problem.
It's a lot lighter. I just came from a rheumatologist. And I got this osteo and psoriatic arthritis. Long story short, along with the injections, which are helping, I've got kind of hurts. She says, you know what? If you can back off on processed foods, and she says, not completely. Don't do a Nazi diet. I heard what you just said about the four-letter word beginning with D. That's supposed to die. But to try and eat fewer processed foods and fewer processed sugar, less processed sugar. And she almost guaranteed the psoriatic arthritis would be greatly reduced, but that is still adjusting food intake, which by definition is a diet. I don't know if that's just semantics or what your take on that is.
Well, I think it depends on the way you... I don't know that it's adjusting food intake. It's just changing what you're eating. Like personally, I try to have only one thing a day out of a wrapper. Because for me, eating whole foods just makes me feel better. So if it's like, I've got to have this, and then I'm going to feel deprived, I want this, and then I'm going to feel deprived, this processed whatever, and now that is a setup. But if you say, you know what, I really want to take care of myself, I don't want to be in pain, so I'm going to give myself something good by having fewer processed foods, it's not necessarily it's not a punishment, then it's something positive that you're doing for yourself. When you look at it that way, then you don't feel deprived of whatever the processed foods were.
Right. If the mindset is I am going to deprive myself of this because it will hurt me if I eat it, that'll be like moths to a flame. But if I say I'm going to eat this because it's better for me, and by that I'll reduce significant pain, that's, maybe seem like a subtle shift, but that could, maybe could make a difference.
It's an absolutely very significant shift, because the first is, oh, look at what I don't get to have anymore. It's been taken away from me. I don't get to have it. I feel really bad that I'm missing out. And the other is, you know what? That stuff made me feel bad and made my body hurt. But making these choices is going to nourishing and nurturing myself with food that's healthy is going to make me feel good and be out of pain. One is deprivation, and one is really, you know, something you're doing for yourself.
Right. Kind of subtle on the face of it, but very significant. Just if I'm at work, which can be stressful, just have maybe something else at hand and to feel empowered eating that instead of going to the poison that is readily available there.
Yes,
and
if you look at it like poison, it's going to be a lot easier to avoid it.
Yeah, true. You put a skull and crossbones on the cookies there, and honestly, I don't know. Okay, that's good.
I just want to say one thing, about your first question.
Sure.
If hypothetically somebody is feeling suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to a therapist. That therapist is unless that person is saying, hey, I am going to do away with myself in this way at this time, that person is not going to call put you, in a psychiatric hospital. That person is going to talk with you.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so the person is going to talk. Unless you are about to do something drastic, no, that's what therapists are there for, to work through it and help you feel better, not to punish you for the way you feel.
Right. Okay. That's not to that extent, but I wanted to check anyway, because there's, like I say, dark places to share, and I would do that.
Well, that's what therapy is for.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, they're not going to come chasing after me with a net or anything. That's only happened 3 times before, and I'm tired of it. Okay, that was a joke. I'm kidding. Okay. Well, anyway, I appreciate your help.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'm glad that you're going to... It sounds like you are dealing with some dark, difficult internal conflicts, and I'm glad you're going to get some help. Therapy is not... that you're broken and you're going in to be fixed. Therapy is coming to a deeper understanding of yourself so that you, you feel better and you know why you feel as you do, and you can make changes.
Okay. Well, actually, it's not easy, but I kind of look forward to it.
Good. Well, keep me posted.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, Larry from Burbank. I hope you feel better soon. It's hard to feel the darkness, but you can get out of it. Sometimes when people are in dark... Oh, hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Brian from Chicago. Nice to hear from you.
You too. Hope everything is well. I have a basic question. It's kind of one that I've always been kind of curious about, and honestly, I've never really had access to anybody to ask it of, so it occurred to me that it would be kind of helpful to understand what is the difference between psychoanalysis and therapy? I've heard people use them almost like they mean the same thing, but then I've heard you use them, and it doesn't sound like they mean the same thing, and I have not been in either, so I don't really know, really what the difference is. And as long as you're on the topic, I would also love to know, what is with the couch? is that real? I mean, it's in, The Sopranos, people are on a couch, or analyze this, Robert De Niro was on a couch, Are people really on couches?
Yeah,
and
people
why,
are.
Why is that other than just being comfortable?
You know, actually, most people are initially not very comfortable on the couch. But let me answer. Okay, let me answer both your questions, which are both very good questions. So therapy refers to a lot of different things. Behavioral, cognitive behavioral, EMDR, you know, family systems therapy. These are all types of psychotherapy. Psychoanalysis is in part a type of psychotherapy. Most therapies primarily are about relieving your symptoms, like just feeling better. Psychoanalysis is, it looks at things that are like self-defeating behaviors, things you don't like doing but you're doing, or painful feelings as symptoms of deeper problems, kind of like my analogy that I'm very fond of, which is the weed and the root. So as everyone who gardens, or even if you don't garden, you know that just yanking a weed is not a permanent solution. You got to dig out the root to get rid of it for good. So the problem is not the weed. The problem is the root that grows the weed. So the weed, in this case, is the symptom that brings people into therapy. And it can only be really alleviated for good by getting rid of that underground root. And so the underground is like the unconscious, and psychoanalysis deals with the unconscious, what is out of our awareness but still affects us, the roots. So the ultimate goal of analysis goes beyond just feeling better and symptom relief. You know, yes, we want to relieve the symptoms, we want people to feel better, but the aim is really beyond crisis resolution. It's about, like I was just telling Larry, it's about helping someone come to a deeper understanding of themselves, really changing the structures of the way people organize themselves. So it's very deep, and it helps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, I could go on and on and on, but I think you get the idea.
Right. So therapy is more like feeding them the fish. Psychoanalysis is more like teaching them to fish.
You know, I think that's a good way to put it. Yes, I would never have used that in that, but yes, that works. Exactly. And it's all, so it's not only is it a theory of the mind, but it's also a way of a method of treatment. And one of the methods of treatment is the couch. Now, the couch, you can do analysis without the couch. There's a lot of, some people would say that's not true. I personally think it is true. But basically, the origins of the couch is that Sigmund Freud, when he was, you know, as the father of psychoanalysis, he said, "Oh, I can't stand being stared at by other people." He just couldn't take their eyes on him. So he just came up with this, like, hey, lie on the couch. But what happened was, having people lie on the couch, not only did it help him avoid being distracted with eye contact, but it allowed him to free up his own mind as he listened to them, and it allowed them to do kind of more free association. So the couch is kind of...
Is that because, like, if they're on the couch, they're not facing the person who's conducting the session? And like, because I know, like, when you say things, especially things that you think are embarrassing or shameful or awful or whatever you're talking about, a lot of times, like when you talk about stuff, you'll be looking at someone's face to read their reaction, and it can make you go, oh, okay, that's upsetting, I should probably stop, or oh, that just got them angry, I better stop what I'm talking about and make that better. If you can't see them and they're not making any noises, you don't know how they're taking it. And so you just keep going maybe to places you wouldn't go.
Well, actually, it's more like, I mean, yes, but no. Like, for example, I wrote a chapter about psychoanalysis in a book called Freud and the Buddha. And I used an example. And actually, this part of the chapter is exactly what you asked, what's with the couch? But I use an example of a patient named Steve. who had a very judgmental father. He became a lawyer to please the father, but at the expense of Steve's sort of authenticity. So one day, Steve shares with his analyst a wish to give up his law practice and open a yoga studio. Now, in face-to-face therapy, Steve would be able to see the therapist's face and feel assured that the therapist was listening in a non-judgmental manner, maybe see the therapist nodding and just like, you know, it would be like, oh, okay, you're with me. But if Steve's on the couch, can't read the expression of the therapist, the analyst, he might automatically imagine his analyst was thinking judgmental and critical thoughts, which is transferring the past experience with the father into the present situation with the analyst. So,
right.
So basically, it's sort of this time travel device in which unresolved traumas and conflicts from the past can be revisited and healed. That's why it's important.
Oh, okay. So they can kind of go where they would go based upon what's happened to them before, and that way the analyst can kind of hear that in a way that they maybe couldn't have heard it, and you can get to it.
Exactly. And so then if Steve is now experiencing his analyst as if the analyst is his father, doesn't matter what the gender of the analyst is, by the way, then what's available is the unresolved relationship with the father alive in the room. And that helps you work through it. So mm-hmm. when you can process and work through it so that you're really healed. Because otherwise,
that's actually a pretty cool technique that just really was born out of the fact that Freud didn't like being looked at.
Yeah, it was one of those happy outcomes that for mm-hmm. our therapeutic world that would have never happened had he been okay with eye contact for 8 hours.
Well, I'm sure if you were there, you could have helped Freud process why he didn't want to be looked at.
Maybe so. Maybe there was some of his own transference going on there that he was avoiding. But it's an extremely valuable tool in psychoanalysis for people who can do it to get to what hasn't been healed, so that you can heal that wound instead of walking around with it as an empty wound always.
Okay. So now you say that sometimes you use it, sometimes you don't. So I imagine you try to evaluate whether or not that might be something that would help a particular person, but it's not like your default.
Yes. I mean, I some people can come in once a week and use the couch. I mean, I've had people say, you know, I just want to do something on a deeper level. I can't come more than once a week. What can we do? And I suggest it, and they do really great with it. I've got people come 4 times a week or more who maybe it wouldn't be right for them because it's too scary. They can't feel connected with me when they're not looking at me. So it really just depends. And there's no good, bad, right, wrong. It's just what's right for any particular person. And as opposed to imposing something on someone, you know, like,
right.
Is this going to be good for that person or not? And if not, mm-hmm. okay, don't be on the couch. You know, it's not
right.
like the transference isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they're that worked up, it's probably going to come out no matter what. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That was actually really interesting. Kind of always been curious about all that, so I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for asking the question, and I always appreciate your questions, which are very sort of ones that I don't get often, but I think that a lot of people probably have thought that very same thing. Like, so what is an analyst?
I was always the kid who would ask the question that everybody else felt stupid asking. That never bothered me, so happy to ask those questions of you.
Well, thank you, Brian, and maybe, you know, call me and let me know how you are doing at another show.
I will.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you know what, guys? That is our show for today. I'm going to be gone next week, but when I'm back, I will be talking more about the 10 so-called healthy things you're doing that sabotage your weight loss. Thank you for being here with me today at LA Talk Radio. I am here live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen later on iTunes, Google Play, anywhere where there are podcasts. And if you like what I have to say, check out my website, winthedietwar.com. I have lots of free giveaways and programs that might be very helpful for you. And please email me any questions you might have. If you don't want to call me, sometimes I answer. I will also answer your questions on the air. Okay, see you in 2 weeks.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.